Brent, leading up to Lena, we talked about how long it felt like that off-season dragged on, and we set the bar really high for what we thought would be a great weekend, and my goodness, the drivers went above and beyond.
Yeah, it was just crazy to start the year off in Lena, Wisconsin, but now, Anago, here we come.
We got a lot to talk about. Let's get to it.
Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by AMSOIL.
Welcome, everyone, to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL. Once again, I'm Brent Smith alongside Shane Stetsny, and we're going to cover all the action heading into Antigo, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and we'll get to Antigo, trust me. We have a lot to talk about there, and it's going to be a really exciting weekend, but we have to unwind some of the stuff that we saw at Dirt City Motorplex, at the mayhem at the Motorplex. Let's start with the headliner, Pro 4, Round 2 from Sunday. Describe what you saw. I mean, we couldn't hardly keep up there in the booth.
Well, Shane, it was one hell of a race, and I couldn't tell you what was going on, and we're over there broadcasting the race. It was crazy how much competition was in our Pro 4 division, let alone the end of that race. I mean, you and I both were trying to call it equally as possible. We didn't know what was going on, but, I mean, the cautions were huge. Every time we turned around, there was a flip over. A guy would lose a wheel. I mean, somebody would start on fire. I mean, yeah, it was unreal. I mean, what was your take on it? Because you and I, we didn't have time to breathe.
Like you said, I mean, you kind of said it all, but it had a little something for everybody, including, like you said, some drama surrounding that caution at the end of the race course. You remember that caution came out because Andrew Carlson was in the lead and ended up on his lid all by himself. So then there's this long, protracted caution that lasted a couple laps, just a local caution down there in turn one at Dirt City Motorplex. And, you know, people online in the comments, seeing the highlight video, they tried to dissect it as best they could. Did Johnny Greaves gain on Johnny Holter in the caution? Yes. Does every single driver who enters a local yellow gain on the driver in front of him? Also yes. Like we said in the moment, we're glad we don't have to make any calls on that kind of stuff. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And if I was in Bobby's shoes and Ryan's shoes, I would probably not want to be there, obviously, because it just I don't know what else to say, because you don't want to favor one driver to the next driver. I'm friends with Johnny Holter big time. You don't want to go, oh, man, he should have ran away with it. But if I was Johnny Holter, I'd have been pretty pissed off. I'm being honest with you. Because you had 5.5 seconds on our screen when he went by the finish line, and we said one lap to go. When he got into turn one, John gained 5-6 car lengths at least. And yeah, John was a little down on horsepower, but I just don't feel that was right. And if you're in Johnny's shoes, you've went through hell and back
right
in the whole race. So what did you have to lose? Like, your truck's still alive and you have to go for the win.
Well, the wrench in all of it, the screwball that contributed to the way that situation unfolded too, is that there was a slower vehicle in front of Johnny Holter coming out of the caution that wasn't able to run at race pace. So I think Johnny Holter pulling out of the caution behind that truck, he looked in front of him, said, hey, that truck's not firing yet, so I'm going to wait till fire just a little bit longer.
Right.
And Johnny Greaves, you know, correctly fired as soon as he got past the yellow. And that contributed to it a lot, too. But also, like I said, you know, in total fairness, and, you know, you're a race car driver, you'll back me up on this. Coming into a local yellow, if you're in second, you're going to gain a little bit, right?
Right.
I'm not
right
off base there.
No,
you're not supposed to. I understand that. But you're going to gain a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely, Shane. And you're going to try to make up as much ground as you can, but you can't see the track workers. You can't see our team up in the booth and Bobby and Ryan making that call. They can see their eyes in the sky, and you can obviously see that. You can see that gap shrinking, but where do you start? When John was waiting for Adrian Chenny, I believe it was, to get out of the local caution as well. I mean, he didn't want to hurt nobody. John was playing the sportsmanship role that we like to see, right? Off the track, off the gas, no different. If it's a caution, you see the flags, slow down. But I don't feel it's right, no matter what. If it's John Greaves, if it was Kyle LeDuc, if it was Adrian Chenny or John Holter, either situation, I just don't really think it's fair that you gain ground under caution, no matter what. We could go to a green-white checkered if that was the deal.
Well, if there's one takeaway from it, you know, regardless of the call or no call that was made, and again, not our call to make regardless, so... And it sounds like you and I disagree a little bit, which is fine. That's fair play, but thankfully not our call to make. But one big takeaway from that is hey, all of a sudden, John Holter looks like a guy that could win some Pro 4 races this year, right?
Yeah, John Holter, he's really done a fine job. I mean, been around him for a couple years now, and they want to do everything in every class, and they put the hard work and the effort in, and he's producing to be a great race car driver. He's putting in the effort. He's putting in the time and oval track, circle track out in Vegas. He's doing what he needs to do to become a good race car driver, and he's been a threat. I mean, the new Pro Light, he looked dominant in.
Yeah.
I mean, that was crazy. And then you go to the Pro 2. He's been fast the first day out, getting a win in it his first year in Pro 2. And the Pro 4, well, that's an old Kyle LeDuc chassis. That's all I should really have to say.
Yeah, he was definitely one of the, you know, one of the surprises, one of the revelations, I think, from the opening rounds at Dirt City Motorplex. How about this for a surprise? How surprised are you by this? Coming out of round 2, Pro 4 points leader, the wild man, Adrian Chenny, with a 9-point lead over Johnny Greaves, the 7-time champ. Are you surprised by that? We've been waiting for years now to see the old Adrian come back, or, you know, classic vintage Adrian Chenny. Is he back?
Hey, dude, that gets me so excited, because I remember seeing you just jumping up and down in the booth calling the race at Bark River last year. We're like, man, the guy finally got over that hump of getting that win back. And it was quite a few years. You know, he took some tumbles. I mean, they don't call him the wild man for just anything. He's starting to settle down, I believe. I mean, getting older in his life, being more responsible in the truck. He's got a great group behind him. Case Gunderson really putting in the work. I mean, I had a chance to talk to Case at Lena, and he's just like, yeah, we keep building trucks, but he's like making himself bond with his own ride. So they're giving him the great equipment. He's doing the driving. And I think you're going to see a lot more of Adrian Chenny, especially on these big tracks.
Yeah. And I go back to last year, especially first half of last year. He seemed a little bit tentative behind the wheel, but tell you what, man, he cut loose at Lena on the box both days, picked up the win in round 1. And again, you know, CJ Greaves had some troubles. Henderson, not the weekend he wanted. Kyle Chaney, who we expect to compete for wins this year in Pro 4, also not a great weekend, ended with that fire on Sunday.
Man, I was just going to say, hey, Kyle Chaney, that was scary. That reminds me of old Rob McCracken days at Joliet, yeah, Illinois.
Hey, you know it's getting hot in there when, you know, we see a driver jump out before the truck's all the way stopped.
Oh,
you know, I get it.
Scary.
Super glad he's okay.
Absolutely.
But yeah, to see Chenney have the weekend that he had. And Pro 4, I mean, say what you will about Henderson and about CJ Greaves and Carlson having some bad luck. You have to survive. And Adrian Chenney, even with that wild man nickname, not only survived, but thrived all weekend. And yeah, it's early to be talking about points, but he's on top right now.
Yeah. And that's what you need to do, right? You need to be consistent. But when you're consistent, you're going to find yourself up in the top in the points. But I feel this Pro 4 class is stacked. I mean, like, these guys are ripping. Like, I've never seen Pro 4 so competitive in some of the new guns coming in. I mean, we yet to see Robert Stout or RJ Anderson. I mean, Cole Mamer's going to be coming back. I mean, we're going to have 15 trucks.
Yeah, you know, talking about the young guns, how about the youngest of them all, Kanan Baker? Not only fell about, 50 yards short of winning in Amsoil Pro side-by-side in round 2, goes out in Pro 4, and he was running for a podium spot. Remember, he had never even driven that truck until he drove it into Tech on Friday. That was the first time Kanan Baker drove his Pro 4. I think that kid can wheel. 16 years old. Unbelievable.
Wow. Dude, we were trying to get our license at 16 and drive through Crandon and Bark River. I can't imagine at that age to get that opportunity, and then not only get the opportunity, but to wheel. I mean, that was a bummer deal, just ending up short. And going for those big wins in Champ Off-Road aren't easy, but to put yourself in that position to win is huge. And you're going to catch our eyes, you're going to catch the fans' eyes, and your sponsors as much as you want, because, hey, you're performing at that young of an age. I can't imagine his future.
Yeah, and I went back and watched parts of that pro side-by-side race from Sunday when he broke, you know, something let go in the car. Coming, you know, we were already announcing him as the winner. And then something let loose and Kyle Chaney was able to sneak past him. That's how close he was to winning that race. But everything up to that point, he took Kyle Chaney and everybody else in pro side by side out behind the woodshed. I mean, he was dominant that entire race. So look out for that kid, I guess, is all I can say.
Yeah, I'm very excited. And that's what's going to bring so much excitement is Antigo has the short track, that muscle down feeling. I mean, our hearts are going to be pumping, Shane, because it's so hard. We're up in the middle of the track. We get to see everything. Yet we got to watch our screens. But, man, it's exciting. It's going to be fast. And it's going to be a contact sport, like we like to call it, because I'll tell you right now, the gloves are going to be off. We keep repeating ourselves, but it's the beginning of the year, and these guys do not care. We're running Pro 4s that are $250,000 trucks, and like Cole Mamer said on his Facebook today and Instagram, he said, we're driving them like rental cars. It's crazy to think what our sport evolved to, and to watch all these younger talented drivers move up. I mean, our sportsman is so talented. If you're a sponsor out there, you need to sit at these racetracks and go look for your drivers, because I mean, if some of these guys got and gals got some funding behind them, we would have some packed fields, because there is a lot of talent in the every class that we watch week in and week out. And I just love this sport to death, and I just really believe that we need to just keep watching our younger generation, because Johnny Greaves, look at him. He's going nuts. At what age is he, Shane?
I don't want to make a bad guess and offend the seven-time champ. So,
come on, just throw it out there. I mean, he's almost as old as my father.
He's been racing at least 10 years. I know that. Well, you mentioned some of the younger drivers who really showed out or have been showing out in Champ Off-Road. Let's talk a little bit about Mod Cart. So last year, Avery Hemmer was close a couple times to winning a race, and we kind of singled her out as being one of the threats to compete for a championship. Well, boy, did she show us. How about sweeping the weekend? And I think both wins were by like 9+ seconds. Did you have any idea that was coming from Avery Hemmer?
Absolutely not. But hey, there was a lot of great things talked about her program and how she developed as a driver in the offseason, and she came out swinging. I mean, this ain't no baseball game. This girl's getting down and digging deep into that dirt and showing that, hey, the boys can play hardball, so can I. And she knows how to drive, and she's got great equipment. And yes, it was a very big surprise, not taking nothing away from her, but it's cool to see new faces up on top.
Yeah, and again, like I said, that's not just sneaking away with a couple wins. That was an absolute beatdown.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, how about another class that we talked about coming into this year that we were both super excited to see? Pro Buggy. You know, in one of our season preview episodes, we talked about a handful of guys that, you know, we said, count on these guys. They're going to compete for wins. And one guy that we didn't talk about a whole lot in there was Lorenzo Bonacci, who was your winner in round two at Dirt City Motorplex. How surprised are you by that? I mean, that's a stacked class right up there with AMSOIL Pro Side-by-Side, Pro 4, or any other class. And hey, all of a sudden, Bonacci planted his flag on the season in round two.
Yeah, it's anybody's game. And I say it around in Circle Track, and when we race up in the Upper Peninsula and in Wisconsin, everyone goes to the bathroom the same. We're all cut out of the same cookie sheet. It's whoever wants it more. Who's going to put the time in? I remember our basketball and football friends growing up through high school, and that they would laugh at us for watching old race tapes. I'm like, guys, this is what we love to do. And you can 90% of these drivers will go back and study, and you're going to see new developed drivers in technology and the way it is now. You can get on an iPad and watch your onboard. You can go back and watch everything on your data box. You can create yourself to understand your truck. And that's why I think back in the day, you didn't know all that. And that's when you seen the good drivers. Now, everyone has such great technology. It takes a little bit to see. But once these guys and gals get these cars figured out, we see some smooth technical race car drivers.
Yeah. And Pro Buggy, probably top of the food chain as far as like technically proficient drivers. And we talked about some of the names in that class. I mean, obviously you've got Steiny, who's the GOAT of buggy racing. We'll be back full time, by the way, after missing round one to be at Michael Meister's wedding. You got the Bernlohr brothers, who are both in the top three in points, by the way. Jordan Bernlohr, like I said, I had talked to him in tech on Friday, and he said, yeah, getting the first win out of the way, that was great. He said, I'm here to win a championship, and he's on top of the point standings, but again, only 2 points ahead of Bonacci. You know, look at those names, man. Billy Booth, fifth in points after the first weekend. He's a guy that could be a threat. I mean, go down the list. The Pro Buggy is insane. I can't wait to see what they do at Antigo.
Yeah, that is such a tight track, and those open wheels, it's always interesting, but you just don't grasp how much talent's in those cars and what it takes to drive and using that cutting brake. They're going to be busy. There's so many turns and obstacles to go over at Andigo. Not a lot of big jumps, but Zach and the guys have done a phenomenal job. I've watched some testing videos through a couple different people. And I mean, Robert Stout, had a chance to talk with him on the internet a couple different times. And he's just excited to be out there. And he said the track was fun. And I mean, they're getting some big air off those back tabletops. And I think in Pro Buggy, we're going to see Billy Booth rise to the top. The old veteran, we're going to see Steinhardt. You said he's back wide open. I mean, you can't count out anyone. It's whoever wants it that bad is going to be on the top of the box.
Let's go back to the sportsman side of things. Another class that, so Pro Buggy, let's contrast these two. Pro Buggy, we knew that there was a ton of talent. We knew kind of what cloth every one of those drivers is cut from. Compare that to stock truck. Coming into this year, we sort of almost didn't know who was going to be racing in stock truck. We had no idea who we thought, you know, who could be a championship favorite. Well, it turns out it's basically everybody in the whole class. The top eight separated by 8 points after the first two rounds. And that's only because the other two who were at Lena both had mechanical issues one or both days. But the top eight separated by 8 points.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's anybody's game this year. And I think it's so amazing to see how much talent we have in the stock division. I mean, that truck class is so fun to watch. Gets me excited going in the morning when we have to start the show. We get a couple kids' classes, then stock truck comes out. And I'll tell you, these are great race car drivers. Great to see the Rogaczewski name back in the field, and not only in the field, but taking a W. And I just think it's awesome just to see what's going on. And those stepping stones are huge. I mean, a lot of these guys are looking to get in a super stock truck, but the stock truck field, there's a lot of great competition.
Yeah, not only a first-time winner on Sunday in round two, like you said, Dustin Rogaczewski, but a first-time winner in round one with Kyle Jenschak taking that win. We're going to have a first-time off-road champion coming out of stock truck this year. And again, anybody's game.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch, and I got to give a shout-out to Kyle Jenschak. He's worked really, really hard, right, trying to get as much knowledge from the Kleiman brothers and asking my brother and I some questions on suspension and how to drive the truck. And he if he settles down, he does really well, and he works on his own truck, still does a 9-to-5 like 90% of these sportsman drivers do, if not 100. They put in the time, the effort, and good for them. New drivers, new winners. We don't like to call the same winner week after week, Shane. You know, we get our heart pumping by giving that new guy or that new gal that opportunity to be on the podium.
Well, just briefly, let's talk about a couple other things that maybe aren't surprises, but notable things coming out of the opening rounds at Dirt City Motorplex. How about Colin Kearns, second in the points, trailing Owen Van Eppern in Pro Stock side-by-side? CJ Greaves had some issues. We have to qualify with that because he's as tough as anybody in that field, but Colin Kearns, one of the local guys from Manitowoc here in Wisconsin, right there in the thick of the points battle. He looked really strong.
Yeah, a very great showing for 2024 for Colin Kearns. He's very much a big contender, I feel, even on the big tracks. He's a driver that wants to be out there, wants to win, doesn't care about the other competitors and what they're doing. He does his job every weekend. And to run against Owen Van Eppern and all these other talented drivers in this field is just phenomenal. And I feel like we see him on our screen a lot, which is good for him.
Yeah, and mentioning the trouble that TJ Greaves has, a lot of work for him to do to defend his title. So this is another one that, looking before the year started, you could have said like, well, CJ Greaves, he's been super tough to beat in Pro Stock. Got to be the favorite again, but he's 39 points back of first right now, or 40 points, excuse me, back of first right now. And again, it's early to be talking about championships, but I'm a numbers guy. You know that about me by now if you've been following Champ Off-Road. He's got a lot of work to do, and this is opportunity. That was kind of the word of the weekend at Lena. Opportunity for guys like Colin Kearns, Jeb Boodle, who also had a really good weekend in Pro Stock, by the way, and a bunch of other guys, the Marquardt brothers. So it will be really fun to see how Pro Stock side-by-side unfolds throughout this whole year.
Yes, I'm very excited, and it's going to be one to watch. And like I said, it's a small technical track. It's more of a side-by-side bull ring, like I like to call it. You put 25 cars on there, we're going to have some mayhem. I mean, you can get upside down very, very easily, and it seems like these cars are more top-heavy on these short technical tracks. So you better buckle up. It's going to be a hell of a show.
Well, quickly, before we move on and talk with our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, I want to remind you that this podcast is presented by Amsoil. Champ Off-Road fans, remember to visit Amsoil.com for products that protect and maximize performance in all your vehicles and motorized toys. Use the convenient Amsoil product guides to find what you need and get fast shipping directly to your doorstep. Amsoil, run with us.
Well, next up on the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil, we're going to do things a little different. We have Paul Hayward, Sportsman Tech Director. Hey, Paul, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, Brent, how's it going? Good to be on the show.
Very good, man. It's exciting to have you. And I mean, your job's busy. Shane and I up in the booth, we are going left and right, up and down, trying to cover all the action. But I mean, back in the pits, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, first off, we start the weekend. We do some safety checks, make sure everyone's got the proper safety gear, helmets are up to date, neck restraint, all that stuff. Kind of go through the cars a little bit, make sure all the necessary safety equipment is there, window nets, dust lights, you know, stuff like that, kind of seat belts, make sure everything's up to date, make sure seats are tight, stuff that the guys might overlook when they're wrenching in the shop, getting ready for a weekend.
So what's the rest of the process for a driver? You know, obviously Brent and I have a good grasp on it, but for fans that have no idea what goes on in tech, so there's pre-race tech where you usually roll through and a really quick check on, you know, a couple of specific things, and then post-race tech, what goes on at both of those places?
So pre-race tech, we're just kind of looking, make sure they got their sticker that we gave them, make sure they did pass tech. Any cars that had to fix a ticket, make sure they come through, have all the necessary repairs before they head up. And then post-race, John and I kind of go over, we'll flip through the book and you know, we'll watch the race on the TV that's there. We can't really get up to the track to watch the race, but we'll kind of see what's going on the track and make a decision on what we're going to check. Sometimes it's random stuff. Sometimes it's something that we noticed or, you know, just kind of wanted to take a peek at. You know, we're just trying to keep everyone on an even playing field, try to keep everyone safe and everything fair.
I think the question that most people are more interested in is, let's say you find something that's outside the rules or if someone doesn't pass post-race tech, then, you know, what are those steps that come next after that?
Well, this one, this was kind of new for me. At Lena, we had an instance where we found something that was beyond the rules, something that maybe wasn't checked. You know, we checked the width on a class, and we found some cars that were a little bit too wide. Not necessarily a performance advantage, but something that was outside of the rules. Maybe something somebody didn't check. Aftermarket parts. Just kind of, check and make sure everybody's reading the rule book, following the rules.
Buying the same tape measure.
Yeah. You know, it happens. Same thing with tire pressure gauges. Everyone's gauge is a little bit different. We got to go off our tape measure and our tire pressure gauge and, you know, what the rule book says, black and white.
It's interesting that you bring up black and white. So obviously your background is as a racer. What I know about racers is they love the gray area. So how much give and take is there with drivers where, you know, like I said, you raced what, almost 10 years. So, you know, not to point a finger, but I bet you pressed some gray areas. So
yeah,
how do those conversations go now that you're on the other side of the hustle?
Yeah. As a racer, we were definitely looking for an edge, looking for the gray areas, looking where we could push the rules a little bit. You know, there are some spots in the rule book that might need to be revised. And that's kind of what we're looking at. We're looking at what guys are doing, what guys are trying to get away with, not calling anybody out. Sometimes it's just an oversight. Right now we're just kind of just making sure that all the rules make sense. And if there is anything that needs to be changed, there's a process for that. It's got to go up for a class for a boat, you know, through Moore or TAMP. So that's one thing I'm learning is, the processes on how things go and how things get changed or not changed.
Is that hard for you though? Like, I mean, to keep a backbone, I mean, that would be my biggest threat to myself would be like, you know, a lot of these drivers, I mean, you've been around almost a decade, if not longer, and you've raced for over that. And to try to not just be their friend, but you're trying to make them not only have a safe vehicle, but you have to make sure you judge everyone the same. You can't favor anyone. And I think that would be the hardest part because everyone's trying to stretch that rubber band, like you said. And I believe that would be the hardest part on my end is trying to catch it, but yet give them another chance to fix it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably the toughest part of the job. You know, I know a lot of the racers. I've raced with a lot of the racers. that was a hard decision to make, but I have a job and I feel like I need to be firm. And going into it, if I would have bent over a little bit or given more leeway, I feel like, where does it end? You know, what rule do I stop at? It was very difficult. There was guys that I had to disqualify, guys that I race with, guys that I'm friends with. My wife races in the class. And
does it make it hard though?
Oh, absolutely. Because I know, and my wife knows, if there's something that she misses on her car and it's illegal, guess what? I'm sleeping on the couch because I'm going to have to DQ her.
That was going to be my next question, is what happens if something runs afoul on Kendra's car that you have to.
Yeah, you know. I had guys offer up the couch if it came to that. But, you know, it's not about catching, you know, cheaters. You know, I'm not calling people out. I'm not saying that anything was deliberate. It's just making sure people are reading the rule book and following the rules, and especially with the safety stuff. I mean, that's huge. You want to be safe out there. You want to go home at night. Go back to your family, go have a couple beers in the pits. Rule book's really important.
So as a sportsman tech director, are you responsible for every sportsman class, side-by-sides, buggies, and trucks?
Not side-by-sides. Short course carts, mod carts, light buggies, single buggies, stock trucks, super stock truck. Yeah, all the side-by-sides Alex takes care of, and then obviously the pro guys take care of the pro trucks.
How is it dealing with racing parents in tech? Because, you know, having two... a preteen and a teen boy in my house, we're at a lot of sporting events. I know how sports parents are. Do you have any, like, even just from the first weekend, you got any like war stories of really upset parents, or have they been mostly calm and collected so far?
Yeah, everyone's been pretty easy to deal with. I had heard some stories from previous tech officials. Parents can be, you know, difficult to deal with sometimes. They want their kids out there. They want them to win. that'd be tough. I know I'm going to eventually run into it, but they got to remember that I'm trying to keep their kids safe and competitive, and it's all for the betterment of the series, the sport.
We love super stock truck. I mean, there's always a battle. There's always decisions that are made back in the pits that we hear reminiscent about who has this in it, who has an arm, who has this restrictor plate. Like, what do you guys look for, say, going into this weekend? I know you can't say what you're going to check, but is there something that you check every weekend, or do you pick one thing?
Not necessarily the same thing every weekend. That's a tricky class. There's a lot of gray areas in the rule book there. Yeah, that's a tricky class. I'm learning a lot about the class. I've been doing a lot of talking with some veterans and stuff, trying to figure out what certain guys are doing or what guys aren't doing. That's one we're keeping an eye on. Super stock is an awesome class. Love the class. I think it could be tightened up a little bit.
So when it comes to making what could, I guess, be changes to the rule book, how much say do you have in that? Are you like the ultimate authority that, you know, you talk with the class rep and talk with the drivers and you come to a conclusion, you have the final say?
Well, first off, we're not really looking to change any rules. You know, if we see something obviously that needs to be changed,
sure,
we'll look into that. But there is a process. Obviously, Ryan with Moore and the whole Moore board needs to be involved, the class rep for sure. A lot of times there's a class vote. You know, if a class brings up something saying, hey, we want to go to this part's hard to find. You know, can we get this amended in the rules? There's a process. The class takes a vote and make sure it makes sense for the class. Ultimately, we want to make sure it doesn't hurt the class. We don't want to see, you know, prices go up or people not want to race because they don't have the equipment that people are wanting to switch to. You know, we gotta, it's a fine line on rule changes or anything like that. Just making sure that the classes stay alive. As far as the final say, I wouldn't say that I'd have the final say. I have a team, you know, Bill Savage, John LaCosser, you know, we'd all kind of get together and talk it out with the Moore board and everyone else to see where we would want to go with anything, you know, any changes or modifications, any rules. But we're not looking to make any changes right now.
So, Paul, let's first dive into your background. We mentioned that you raced for a long time. You were a buggy dork for like 8-9 years, made it all the way up into pro spec last year. But let's go back to the very, very start. How did you get introduced to short course off-road racing?
Well, yeah, definitely a buggy dork. Always going to be a buggy dork. First time I went to a race was Bark River, my home track. That weekend, I probably did more drinking than watching racing. But when I met my wife, we went to Fall Crandon, and it was just like, I want to do that. I could do that. I could be faster than all those guys out there, which didn't end up being true. It looks way easier from the stands than it is. Yeah, found a light buggy in my price range. Went out there, started in that, learned how hard it was to keep a car on a track and keep things maintained. But once we figured it out, we started doing pretty decent. Yeah, ran light buggy for a few years, got a couple podiums in that class. Decided to move to a single buggy. That was a super fun class. Kind of stepped it up a notch, a little bit more speed, a little bit more brake suspension, a little bit more money. So it got a little bit more expensive.
Got to pay for comfort.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It was definitely a nicer ride. The faster you go, the nicer the ride gets. You know, jumped in to pro buggy. That was an awesome class. That was a lot of fun. You got
those things land good though.
Oh, like a pillow, man. They're fun, and you can throw them in the corners and not worry about flipping them. You know, like a pro spec truck. Those things are a little bit tippy.
They really are. Do you have plans to get back into the pro spec sometime?
I always have plans, and it drives my wife nuts because I change my mind all the time. I still do have the pro.
So do they? Come on.
Yeah. I still have my pro spec. It's for sale. Got a couple guys interested in it. I did pick up a pro light that I had planned to convert into a pro spec. Things are up in the air right now. We're going to see how this tech director thing goes. I'm liking it so far. Been doing it almost 10 years. I kind of wanted a little bit of a change. Kind of got burnt out a little bit. Figured I'd give back to the sport, you know, in one way I could.
And you've been around for so long now. And I mean, Shane and I can both say it. I mean, once you're around for the first couple of days, you're hooked, you're stuck, you're involved, your feet are in quicksand, and you never want to go away.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if I'd ever get away from short course off-road. It's awesome. The friends you make, the family, I mean, they're like family. You look forward to going to the races to hang out with all your buddies. You know, have some beers and see what everyone else has been up to and seeing what they're doing to their race cars. And yeah, it's definitely hard to walk away from. I don't know if I ever could.
So what was the process that led to you actually taking on this role as Sportsman Tech Director? I mean, was that something that you decided you wanted to do, or someone else have to talk you into it a little bit, or how did this all come about?
I've been thinking about taking a break from behind the wheel for a little bit. Running the pro spec kind of took it out of me. It was, you know, we don't have a crew or a big crew or anything. So, you know, between working on the truck and Kendra's car and helping out some other race teams, I kind of just wanted a little bit of a break. I talked to Al. He was really interested in me coming on board. I thought I was just going to be a tech official. I think Al might have seen an opening to take a break himself. And I got dropped into this position, which I'm happy with. I'm having a good time with it, and it's definitely a challenge, but definitely up for the challenge.
Like, do you, I mean, you say it's fun, you're excited to be there every weekend, but do you feel that you fit that part for the next 5 years? I mean, do you feel like you want to continue to do it? I mean, if you get back in the seat of a race car, that would be hard, but you could still volunteer and have that as a job as well. But you know, it's a busy weekend, so it's like, are you enjoying the time now, or do you feel this is your future?
It's hard to tell. Right now, I'm enjoying it. It is a lot of work. It's I thought the driver's meetings were early, but get up there earlier than the driver's meeting to get set up for the day, and I could see myself doing it for a while. It is tough watching all my friends jump into race cars and get out on the track. I do miss that part of it, but someone's got to do it, and I think I'm a pretty good fit. I've been around the racing for a while. I've built my own, not from scratch, but completely gone through race cars. I think I've learned a lot. I think I have still some to learn about certain classes, but definitely learning more every time I'm out.
So what, you know, obviously the challenges that being a tech director brings, what is it about you and maybe your personality that makes you the right person to do it?
I guess just, I mean, from a safety standpoint, I'll start there. You know, I've been in some rollovers, some wrecks. I was the first guy to get hauled off a dirt city track in an ambulance. I know how important safety is. I know how easily it is to overlook safety. That's probably one of my biggest things this year getting into it, is just make sure everyone's safe. You know, it's tough. It's hard to look at absolutely everything on a race car in the limited amount of time you have with them coming through. You try to use your best judgment, be fair with everybody. And, you know, if somebody doesn't understand a rule, to explain it and kind of show them where it is in the book and what it means.
No, I think it's a great what you're doing for the sport, Paul. And I agree with you 120%. I've been around you quite a while now, and you love it. You have that passion. Like Shane and I mean, we're up in the booth and we have that passion, that drive to make the sport better, and anything we can do to help it, that's what we're there for. And I feel you're doing the same back in the background of the racing situation. A lot of people don't see that or respect that, where you are getting up extra early to get everything ready to make everyone safe, not to take their wins away.
Yeah, exactly. That's the last thing I want to do. But like I said, the rule book is important, you know, not only from a safety standpoint, but to keep everybody fair, to keep it affordable, which we all know racing isn't exactly affordable. Yeah, just try to make everybody on the keep everybody on the even playing field.
Well, Paul, with rounds 3 and 4 at Antigo just a couple days away now as we're recording here, let's talk about that a little bit. So you obviously raced in Antigo the last 4 years that we've been there. What does it take to be successful as a driver at Antigo?
It's a technical track. You got to survive. You know, there's some tight corners, some 90 degree corners, some carnage out there, dusty at times, truck kind of falls apart. Just survive until the end, making smart choices and, making it through the pack.
Any classes that you mentioned you get to sort of keep an eye on the racing action, you know, through a TV screen, any classes that you're really excited to see, especially coming out of some of the excitement that we saw in Lena, anything you're looking forward to watching at Antigo?
I don't know. I get excited for all of them.
That's the right answer.
No, I do. And I'm a sportsman driver, you know, and I ran the pro buggy. That was awesome. I'm always interested in watching how that class shakes out. There's some new drivers in that class. Obviously pro spec, I came from that class recently and I got a bunch of friends in that class. It's really cool to see them guys, progress with their programs. But super stock truck, you know, that class is always one to watch because you never know what's going to happen. That's always crazy fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. I love Antigo as well. And I just thank you for hanging out with us, Paul. I mean, I know you're pretty busy just with everyday work and getting ready for Antigo. And I'm excited. It's been a long time since we've seen a cup race at a short track. So things are going to get gnarly, and I'm sure you're going to see your share of body panels back in the tech.
Definitely looking forward to it.
All right. We appreciate your time, Paul. We'll catch up with you here in a couple days.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, Shane, with rounds 1 and 2 out of the way, it's time to go to another short track. We're going to Antigo, Wisconsin, one of our favorite short tracks in our lives, Shane. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, I remember trying to go to Antigo.
I have vivid memories of being in the grandstands at Antigo. Dan Vandenhoevel Racing Class 13, and he used to give out those vinyl flags that said
yep.
his racing number, 1377, and then just say no, as in just say no to drugs. And I remember waving one of those flags. I was probably 6 years old. So yeah, I have some fond memories of Antigo. Not to mention, you know, the past couple of years that we've been able to go there for some excellent racing with Champ Off-Road. But let's talk some of the headlines here at Antigo. For me, a big headline, you know, there's the biggest headline, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But the big headline for me is, this is Johnny Greaves returning to the place where he crashed just a year ago.
Yeah, I remember you and I, we were just reminiscing up in the booth, just getting ready for the weekend and in practice. He did a crazy roll, and he went for one hell of a ride. CJ ended up going over the wall after and helping him out, and luckily he was okay. But that was scary, and for him, it was probably just another crash. But for us, it's like, man, he got the hell beat out of him, and he bounced back and later on started getting back in a truck, had Kyle Greaves pilot in the Pro 4 after they fixed it. Brad Marty did a hell of a job getting it back together for that next day, but let alone shows how safe those trucks are. But yeah, you got to be thinking that Johnny coming in there is thinking about that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak on that at all because I'm not a racer. I'm not a driver. But have you ever had to go through something like that where you have to go back and reckon with a crash that happened and race on the same track?
Yeah, I did actually back. I think it was back 2012, 11 or 12. I crashed really hard at Bark River, had a failure in the brakes, went up the hill and crashed very, very hard. Like I said, and it hurt and mentally took a little bit out of me, but we went to Crandon after that. So another fast straightaway. And I remember trying to get the truck back together 3 days later and just reaching out to Kyle LeDuc and asking him if he could get us a quick King Shock from California and put the truck back together, and then mentally had to go to Crandon wide open turn one, because you ain't going to win if you ain't going wide open to the wall in turn one. And I remember when we took off, that was, what, 2 weeks after Bark River, and I came out and I finished third. My crew chief, Jerry Russell, and Chino Angel Azada came out, and I had one spark plug wire hanging. So we were on seven cylinders, finished behind Justin Keener and Nick Bing, and we were doing what we need to do. But I got out of the race truck, I remember going, hey, Brock, that sucks. We didn't have a chance to win that because we had seven cylinders. But hey, Brock's like, dude, you crashed out at Bark River and you're back in a truck. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. Cause like, you're just back in the moment, right? I don't think John's really going to think much about it once he's in the truck. But like, you just move forward, but it scares the hell out of you.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that it's not going to weigh on him too heavily. Again, this is us two regular dudes, and you're a racer, but you, no offense, Brent,
I'm
you're not
Johnny
Greaves.
I'm sorry. I'd have been gone years ago.
Like I said this during racing at Lena, and I think I said it here on the podcast another time too. That guy is just, he's different, man. The stuff he's come back from. I'm thinking about all the crashes and gnarly situations I've seen in person. And then some of the stuff that happened, you know, years ago racing out west. I don't know if he's made out of titanium or has a screw loose or something in the middle or some combination. The cat is just a different guy. I don't think it's going to bother him at all. And he was fast and obviously won that race in round two under those possibly dubious circumstances, but I digress.
What happened in that Pro 4 race?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Johnny, he's just an animal. I'm not favoring Johnny Greaves. I'm just saying, if you can get beat around and pushed around and shoved and thrown over a railing, 20 feet drop off on the backside and land on your roof and still come back, I would have been done. I don't care if I'm 38 years old. Like, I would have been like, man, life is too precious. But this is what this guy was born to do. He was bred to be an off-road racer, and he doesn't want to be done yet. Look at Rob McCracken. He's out there running the desert. These guys are in their 60s, still competing at a top level.
Yeah, I just know that ain't me, man.
No. Well, we'll sit up in the booth right now.
Yeah. I like my comfy chairs and not winding up upside down. A couple other news and notes about Antigo here for rounds 3 and 4. Michael Funk is going to be back in Pro Light. His family's work, farming, you know, took precedence during Lena. It's big season getting the crops in. So Michael Funk back in Pro Light. Porter Inglese, this I'm excited about, makes his Pro Spec debut. His brother Antonio just finished 4th in round 2 in Pro Light. Had a really great day.
Another Pro Spec driver, Shane. This is what we like to see. I mean, that class keeps building.
Yeah, and he's not just some dude. You know, he's a 2-time defending mod cart champion. That kid can wheel. It'll take him a little bit to figure out the truck, and we saw that a couple of years ago with Easton Sleeper, who was super fast in mod carts. You know, you're adding more than 2,000 pounds worth of machine underneath you. Probably a step down in horsepower to weight, and it's a whole new animal relearning how to drive, but how easy he made it look in mod cart, I think Porter Inglese is going to do really well in pro spec.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fear of going fast is well over that. I mean, he's not going to worry about it, because those mod carts rip. So, I mean, if he can get in there, respect the truck, and do what he does, he's a quiet, great race car driver. I mean, he's from Felch, Michigan. You don't think our boy Chad Horde's been giving him some pointers? He knows what to do, how to win, and he's a great kid. I mean, there's young talent everywhere, and he's going to get a shot to run against Nick Visser, you know, and Chris Vandenels, and just guys that are making steps in the sport, trying to be better, and he's going to click off where I think he needs to start off, if you ask me. He's going to adapt to that truck very well.
Well, another quick headline, another driver making his comeback here for 2024, Chase Allsteen. We talked a little bit about him in mod cart at Dirt City Motorplex. Had to miss that one with a broken hand. He sent me a message. He said the hand is not all the way healed, but he said he feels about 80%, and he is full systems go for rounds 3 and 4. So good to see Chase Allsteen back there in mod cart. He had Hunter Vanzile fill in for him back in Lena just a couple weeks ago, but Chase Allsteen back in the field for mod cart. And again, mod cart's going to be a blast all season, and especially in Antigo.
Yeah, I'm very excited to watch the mod cart division, and the class is just growing the past three, 4 years. And that's so much fun to watch. It gets our blood flowing like the big trucks, and they look like little big trucks. I mean, they're the mini-me's of our Pro 2, Pro 4s. Take the panels off and you look underneath them, all the upper and lower A-arm, trailing arms. I mean, it's crazy at their young age. They get to go that fast and respect the truck and drive it at that pace. And that's why I don't think it's going to be a big stepping stone when guys like Porter and Glazy make that next step.
Well, I mentioned this a few moments ago, Brent, but the big headline from Antigo, of course, the Kyle LeDuc Memorial Cup race. Very fitting place to have this race. Kyle, of course, helped redesign and rebuild the track just a couple of years ago, added some of those bigger features, the more vertical jumps, and we're going to honor his memory with the first heavy metal race, if you want to call it that, Pro 2s versus Pro 4s in Antigo, and it's the first time since, I couldn't remember how long, I should have texted Nolan because he knows everything, but I want to say like since the days of Walker Evans and Jack Flannery, it's been at least a couple decades since we've seen a heavy metal race at Antigo.
Yeah, you know, Shane, I like to watch those old school races on TV and get to pull them up on YouTube. And I think it was a long time ago. It had to be the late 90s that we have seen that at Antigo. And I think it's going to be exciting. I mean, Kyle LeDuc, he was wide open. He loved to go fast and he loved to see a challenge. That's why he went to Zach and said, hey, let's make something different. I spent a couple different times on the phone with Kyle going, man, you know, yeah, Antigo's Antigo, but why don't we make it different? Like, yeah, the rhythm section's fun, but what other things could we create? And he put some tabletops in there and he didn't get to really play on it that much, and it really breaks my heart, because if I was going to the weekend and we seen a cup race, I would be in favor of Kyle LeDuc whooping everybody's butt and taking it from dead last to the finish, because he's done it. Kyle LeDuc won every damn cup race out there because he knew what it took. The gloves were off, the brain was shut off, and you just went for it. And that's what we're going to see at Antigo. And I know there's a lot of great talent in this field and Pro 2 and Pro 4, but it's going to be interesting. We're going to talk here what's going to go on for it.
Yeah, just a quick rundown of the format. If you've been watching off-road racing for the last 30-plus years, you know how this works. Pro 2s are going to get a head start. They're going to let six Pro 2s, determined by who the fastest of the weekend are, race against the six best Pro 4s. So no field fillers. This is going to be the fastest of the fast from both Pro 2 and Pro 4. Pro 2s are going to get a head start. The length of that head start yet to be determined. It'll go off of lap times, I'm assuming, just like it does at Crandon. And then a very interesting wrinkle. So there's going to be a joker lane. If you've ever watched rallycross racing, especially uses a joker lane where it's actually basically a shortcut that's built into one part of the track.
You're joking me, Shane.
All the Pro 2s can run the joker lane one time and they have to wait till the last three laps to choose their moment to run that joker lane. So that'll let them basically gain a bunch more ground back that they would have been losing to Pro 4s.
Well, I hope nobody loses their radio contact. I'll tell you that. That's going to suck because you got to start counting laps.
Interesting format. I like the idea of the joker lane. That track is perfectly laid out for it. I haven't seen details on where it'll be yet, but I have a really good suspicion of where it'll be and it'll cut a pretty good amount of the track. So strategy comes into play. Obviously, with a shootout race like this, there's no midway caution, but Pro 2s get an extra wrinkle, a little bit of an extra advantage, despite being down on horsepower and only having two-wheel drive. I think it gives them a fair chance, and a lot of that, again, comes down to that head start and how that's determined. But one thing I can promise you, and this is befitting of the man that it's honoring, Kyle LeDuc, like you said, it's going to be an absolutely wild race to end the weekend at Antigo.
Yeah, if you're a race fan, you better sit right next to the fence and just wait for all the carnage after to get your favorite driver to sign their panel, because nobody's going to care, right? It's the end of the weekend. They get to run their points day earlier in the day, which is pretty cool. Get the blood going in the morning and getting everything aligned. Their crews are going to have to go back and bust butt just like Crandon in the fall. And I mean, I'm excited to watch it go down because we have a lot of good race car drivers that are going to go for it all. I mean, we talk about Adrian Chenny really having a great shot this year. I mean, what does Johnny Holdger have to lose in that big cup race? You got a couple weeks before you got to get ready for the next one. So when they come back in the evening to race, I think it's anybody's game. I couldn't tell you. I have some ideas who I feel is going to take that top spot at the end, but you and I both know that anything can happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, we both saw round two of Pro 4. We know that anything can and will happen. Can't wait to see how it all shakes out at Antigo. We will be live on Flow Racing, 9:45 Central Time, for the Antigo Off-Road National. That is round three of the 2024 season. You can find us there on Flow Racing, or even better, pack your car full of your friends and make it out to the track in Antigo, Wisconsin. Beautiful facility, covered grandstands. Weather looks like it'll mostly cooperate with us. Mid-60s, that means good racing temperatures, if nothing else. But for sure, you want to be there. And if you can't be there, find us on Flow Racing.
Well, Shane, I'm very excited to get back to Antigo, Wisconsin. The racing's going to be just so exciting. I can't wait. It's going to be one heck of a show. For Brent Smith and Shane Stetsny, we'll see you there.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by AMSOIL.